This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Did you know only 0.4% of our 396,000 monthly Joy listeners support us financially? If you love what we do, please show your support this radiothon. This year, there's a new way to show your love. Grab a Joy Passionate Supporters Pack, complete with our 25-year t-shirt, commemorative pin, and our bumper sticker. But hurry, there's only 250 tees available. Head to joy.org.au and click the Passionate Supporter button now. Joy, 25 years proud.
Broadway icon John Cameron Mitchell channels the essence of his glam rock icon, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, for one night only at Arts Centre Melbourne this July. So put on some makeup, turn up the A-track, and pull the wig down from the shelf. John Cameron Mitchell, July 10 at Arts Centre Melbourne. Book now. Joy sponsor.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast, brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Saturday Magazine starts now.
From Joy 94.9, this is Saturday Magazine.
Live across Melbourne, Australia and the world's most livable city with the world's best Lord Mayor. This is Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, streaming online, everywhere, on podcast and, of course, via the app. It is Joy's longest-running flagship news, current affairs and lifestyle program, an ever-changing mix of local and national news, current affairs and TASS's opinion, all framed within a queer perspective. I'm Macca. Good morning. It's the Saturday, the 23rd of Hoon. That's what I've written, Hoon. On behalf of Saturday Magazine, I acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we meet and pay our respects to elders past and present and future. I'd like also to pay my respects and honour the elders from our diverse LGBTIQ communities. I've got to get that. There's two Qs and then there's communities.
You need to sort that out. Need to get the words.
Oh, stop clicking out. The pen. Yes, sorry. Now, in just a moment, our new Lord Mayor is going to join us. And you know what? I think she's a pretty impressive and engaging.
She's actually in the studio.
I know. Right? Yeah,
you're talking about her like she's not even here.
That's right.
I'm not sure how long I can wear the new mantle either.
Good morning, Sally.
It's so lovely to be here.
You've got your security pass. Have you got does the mayor get a credit card?
I do.
Have you got that?
Yes.
Okay, you're not new then.
I reckon you can get away with it for about 3 months.
Three months. Honeymoon period for 3 months. Excellent.
Now, I wanted to share something. I'm not going to do the usual because we've got lots of people on today. I've already tweeted it. So if you're not looking at our Twitter, then
you're not in.
You're missing something. So, but just in case the Prime Minister is listening, in the last 52 weeks, Saturday Magazine has done 364 segments/interviews. Of these, 84 are what we would class as political interviews, 21%. Now, Malcolm, this is not the ABC. 29 of those interviews, 34%, were with Liberals. 27, 32%, were with Labor. 13 with the Greens, 15%, and 15, which is 19%, Independents, Ratbags, or Pauline Hanson. Well, actually, same thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I'm an independent.
And Sally is an independent, so yes, you've just increased the...
You're not in the same camp as Pauline Hanson, though.
I was worried about Ratbag.
No. So...
Actually, I don't know that she's an independent anymore. Isn't she part of the coalition? Government coalition?
Well, I don't know whether we call it Dun Nation or Dumb Nation. Which one is it, do you think?
Preferably
Dun. No response from the mayor. Okay, welcome, Sally Capp, Lord Mayor, 4 weeks. Really, really interesting time for you because whilst you've had other roles, you know, in industry and in government when you were Agent General, this is a much, much more public position, isn't it? And 4 weeks in, how's it feel?
Well, thank you and thanks for having me. And 4 weeks in, it feels unreal. And I mean that in a couple of ways. One, I still wake up and pinch myself and say, am I really the 104th Lord Mayor of Melbourne? Because it's pretty exciting and thrilling from that perspective. So there's still the joy of that that lives on. And then unreal, because I find myself in the most amazing situations. I'm learning a lot. There have been some incredibly happy things that I've been a part of, and then of course more recently some incredibly sad things, and it's really shown me the breadth of the role as well. So it's been terrific.
It's directly elected, which I think is very, very important. You're the first directly elected female Lord Mayor, which is also very, very important. And why it's important is you actually come to the role with a mandate, because you got a majority of the votes, and more than 50%. Not like someone else got 32 and you got 34. You got 52?
Mm-hmm. 50, yeah, that'll do.
So that means more than half the electors in the city of Melbourne who voted wanted you. That gives you a mandate, as opposed to what I'd call a minority mandate, which when you get less than 50%, Tass.
Ah, but Macca, politics is all about the art of persuasion.
Yes.
And if you don't have the numbers...
But you know what the difference between...
You have to work really hard to get your point of view through.
You know what the difference between second and last is, Tass? The spelling. Sally came first, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you do have to have the numbers. So in terms of, you know, your agenda, you've spoken about that, you know, on the show. Is this your third or fourth? It's your third at least, isn't
third
it?
Third time.
What's the one thing that you think is going to be the most challenging of your term as Lord Mayor? Is it going to be traffic or, you know, transportation in Melbourne? Is it going to be Queen Victoria Market? Is it, you know, is it going to be safety in the city? What's it going to be?
Well, great question, and excuse me, thank you again. And I really pick up on Taz's point, because I did win, and I do feel that there's a lot of support for the platform on which I campaigned, which is terrific, which I'll come to. But, of course, I am one of 11 councillors, so I also need to use those influencing skills to convince or talk to or, you know, help my colleagues understand why some of my ideas are great ideas for the city. In terms of challenges, I think this week actually has demonstrated one of them very, very well, and that is we do have current issues like Queen Victoria Market and security, and when we can see and feel those things, there's something about the urgency and the tangibility that actually makes them easier to manage because people are engaged in those at the moment. I'm not saying that they're not difficult, I'm just saying it makes them a bit easier to manage. What happened this week when we released our transport draft discussion papers was absolutely fascinating to me, because those papers are about a strategy right through to 2030. And we need to have those sorts of discussions because, you know, in the face of what I see as opportunities like population growth, we need to be planning now for those. That's why I had big aspirational ideas like the Highline Park and 5G as part of the campaign. We need to be planning for those now. And what happened as a result of releasing deliberately provocative discussion papers is that the whole of Melbourne went into overload in terms of commenting on those, and unfortunately some people, won't name them, missed the point. It wasn't about what's going to happen tomorrow. It's a conversation about how do we need to be and what do we think we want to be well into the future. And I think that's going to be the most challenging discussion and debate that we can get our Melburnians involved in, and hopefully we can talk about some of those things, because getting people to lift their minds up out of the day-to-day, I'm not saying that's not important, that is too, but taking those opportunities to really think about the future is challenging by its nature, but it's something we really need to do. And
well, that's
so more
a great
of that
way to frame the conversation for this morning.
Lord Mayor Sally Capp is in the studio with us, and Tass, this is an issue that you're really passionate about, is getting around in Melbourne on push bike, on foot, public transport.
Well, I'll give
bus,
you a little bit of an anecdote, Macca,
and perhaps sometimes a car.
I live in St Kilda.
Yeah.
And I worked in Hawthorne, which is a 6.7 kilometre drive. it would take me a minimum of 40 minutes to do during peak hours, and somewhere on average, 50, 55 minutes. I always allowed an hour. Sometimes I got to work late. If I had a 9 a.m. meeting, I'd always leave home at 7:45. Otherwise, I'd be stuck in traffic for about an hour and a quarter. So I gave that up, and I decided to move to public transport.
How long did it take?
An hour. I had to allow an hour. So it was actually about the same amount of time.
You knew it could be the same.
So there's something really wrong in Melbourne if we have to spend an hour to commute 6.7 kilometres.
Now, it's interesting, Sally. During the week, you spoke about people, or some people, coming through the city in cars to get to someone else, somewhere else, when they're not doing business or doing some transaction in the city. And I identified with that. I live in Moonee Ponds, and I've actually given up and on CityLink, Bolte Bridge, all that, whatever Vic Roads, whatever they've done, it's not just volume, they've messed it up. So I used to, and I leave for work at 6:30 in the morning. I discovered that I could come through the city. So I'd come down Lygon Street and then, Rathdown Exhibition to get on CityLink past the cricket ground. It was actually 10 or 15 minutes quicker to get to the same point than it was on the freeway. I then decided, well, that was a bit silly putting extra traffic actually in the CBD. I now go EastLink. But I thought it was interesting that all the traffic that actually transits through the city, and where I absolutely...
It moves quickly now, doesn't it?
It does move quickly. Where I agree with you is in the little streets, Little Collins. I think, yes, let's make the footpaths wider. Let's provide a dedicated bike lane. But I would say not all of one side of the street, but some of the street, you do need to provide some on-street parking for people for very short visits and for picking stuff up. I know people go, yes, you can pick it up at the store and everything. I think there can be a compromise. I realise this is for the future, but I agree with you on the little streets. I think it makes a lot of sense, because all they are is gridlocked anyway. Let's actually allow the pedestrians and the push bikes a better way to get through. But please, my bid is don't take away the on-street parking.
Okay, let's hear from the Lord Mayor
in its totality, and let's not feed the coffers of the car park operators that, you know, they know how to charge. Anyway, I'm going to shut up now.
Well, look, and you've just demonstrated, you know, how we need to balance out so many of these uses in the city as well, because, of course, we've got emergency services vehicles that need to be able to park. We've got vehicles that bring people that have otherwise disabilities or difficulty accessing the city. We've got tradespeople and deliveries needing to do that as well. And, in fact, I had a conversation the other day with a tradie who said, I can't find anywhere to park. And he was frustrated by the shoppers parking, because he said, I'm actually here to help a shop and I've had to park, you know, a kilometre away and lug all my gear. So we've got so much happening in the city. How do we actually understand what is the balance of those uses and then set up our space, our entire space, so that better reflects that? But I can tell you, you know, a couple of my own experiences down our littles, I call them.
Yes.
So coming out of Parliament Station and coming down Little Collins Street in the morning with just that rush of people to get to work, trying to get down Little Collins Street on that tiniest bit of pavement and seeing a whole row of parked cars there is really frustrating. And the same if I'm in Chinatown during a busy time when everybody's queued up outside those fantastic dumpling places, you can't get around on the pavement.
But the last couple of weeks, they've actually shut down Little Bourke Street to do works, and it's been a mall. It's been a spontaneous mall that actually works.
So people walking on the road because they know they can, as opposed to just wandering out on
the road. No, it means that people can actually wander and engage and go about their business, but not feel like they are actually having to combat cars.
The evidence from other cities around the world is that when you actually widen the footpaths and allow pedestrians the time to actually enjoy and interact and go into shops and come out and look in windows and sit down and have a coffee, that the economic benefit to the city actually goes up significantly as well.
And there wouldn't be a single historical centre in any European city around the world that hasn't done that now. You know, one of the nicest things in Spain is that they've actually moved car parking under the plazas.
Yes.
So,
well, the Ramblas in Barcelona, it's one lane.
Exactly.
You know, and they've widened it and widened it. Yeah.
So, look, we're looking at international cities. We are looking into the future at how we want to be living, working, playing, studying here in the city. And that's why we've opened this up. We are not planning to have a draft strategy until the end of this year. So all of this time is about taking in the views of Melburnians and other people that come into the city. We're at 950,000 people that come into the city daily now. And by 2036, that's 1.4 million people coming into the city. So if the majority of the trips in the city, as it is at the moment, are pedestrian trips, but the majority of the space is given to cars, it does actually seem a little bit out of balance.
Yeah, so, Sally, what are the principles that underlie your vision for the future of Melbourne? I'm not asking you to tell us now what you want to see in the the vision statement in at the end of this year. You may want to share that with us, but I'll allow you not to. What are the things that underpin your vision?
Well, here goes in a nutshell. Cities are increasingly important around the world. We're the most urbanised that we've ever been as a population, so we need to get our cities right. And as you know, 7 years in a row of most livable city means that, in a way, we're a victim of our own success because we're attracting so many people to come and live here in Melbourne. So one of the underlying premises of the way I think is that I want to see that as an opportunity, not as a challenge, because we're going to have growth. I know there's debate about population, etc. They're all worth having, but the fact is, even within Australia, in terms of the number of people coming here, we are going to have growth in Melbourne. It can either be good growth because we've been proactive, we've seen it as an opportunity, we've started planning now, we're having the debates, we're looking at all the important issues, and we're preparing ourselves for that future, or we're going to have bad growth, and that bad growth can potentially cripple our city. And we see growing pains now. We know what that's going to look like. Who amongst us wants to sort of throw our arms in the air and say it's too hard? Not me.
No, of course.
We've absolutely got to, all of us, get engaged in what the future of our city looks like. And I think it's incredibly bright. So that's a big part of the premise. And the other part of mine is really about boldness. I believe we've got to be bold. I know we have the capability here in Victoria and Melbourne to be able to do that. It's about really big ideas, and it's about a culture in our community that gets in behind those ideas. And even if we don't fulfil the absolute, you know, 100% of that, the fact that we get to 75% means that we're way ahead of where we were. So it's that sense of boldness, and it's a community that really supports big, bold ideas, but also acknowledges that when things don't work out quite the way we wanted to, that that's still okay. We're further ahead than we were before.
So underlying all of that, of course, is the need for infrastructure. So, you know, what's that going to look like, and how does the council work with the state government to actually ensure that we have a joined up approach to, you know, realising the vision for the future?
Yeah, great question. And I'll give you some practical examples, actually, because Melbourne Metro Project is the largest infrastructure project we have really in Australia at the moment. And it's 5 years of construction in this city, and you can look out here and see some of the impacts already. So one of the ways in which, you know, obviously years ago when the planning for this started, that we worked with the state government, is to understand that when people come up out of the Melbourne Metro, they need to have a very good experience so that when they emerge from what's going to be a state-of-the-art brilliant set of stations underground, that they have a matching experience when they come up. So we've done a huge amount of work with the state government to look at each of those plazas where the underground stations will come up and make sure that they are great civic spaces where we can have volumes of people coming in and out, where there are different types of engaging and stimulating ways in which they can interact, whether that's a retail experience or a civic experience. It's really about planning ahead, and so that's what we've been doing.
That sounds really exciting.
I think so.
And that relationship with state government's working well?
Well, it is working well. I mean, there are, like any relationships, there are from time to time when we don't agree on things. But on the whole, again, in terms of forward planning, we're definitely on the same page there because we've all got the same ambition to make sure that this remains one of the great cities of the world.
Fantastic. It is. Sounds like a great vision.
I love the whole High Line idea.
Yeah.
It makes so much sense. Because, again, it's about people being able to get around. One question I have about Highline, would people be allowed to ride bicycles on there?
The plan at the moment is yes,
yes.
Definitely. This is about providing a new link and how we get around the city and particularly a link between the city and Docklands, and walking and cycling are important components of that.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Being able to stop and enjoy different perspectives of the city bring a green space to the city to so more lungs, more lung capacity, yep. If you like. And we know that open spaces are great for all sorts of other health and community benefits. I'm not doubting the degree of difficulty, but I'm really grateful to my colleagues at the City of Melbourne. We've just allocated some funds to actually do the first concept plan. And we'll be getting underway on that immediately.
How exciting is that?
Yep. Mm.
Now, if any of our listeners are interested in being engaged in the conversation that
yes.
you've just sort of initiated mm. around the future visioning of Melbourne, how can they do that?
Oh, great question. Well, there are lots of ways. For example, as I said, you know, we've just started this new approach to our discussion papers so that we're allowing more time for people to engage, but we're also putting provocative questions out there because I think that actually means that people react. And yep. we've seen that
stimulates
this week, which
the conversation.
Is terrific. Exactly. So there are those very public ways, and I encourage people to go onto our website. We've still got a number of those papers open, including our cycling discussion paper, and we've got one coming out, I believe, next week, which is the congestion charging. But we'll continue doing that. So we want to improve the openness and transparency of council. So that's one very public way. And then depending on what the project is, we engage in all sorts of different ways. I'm trying to pick one that's perhaps, I'm just going to say it, it's a little bit controversial, but Queen Victoria Market obviously is an icon in Melbourne. It's deserving of major investment for lots of reasons. We haven't been able to find a particular way forward to this point, and so the way that we engage again with our community around that project, which is near and dear to all of us, is going to be important. So we're just thinking about that at the moment and coming back to the community to suggest a new engagement.
So the best way is to go straight to the Melbourne City Council website.
Yes.
And search out the papers.
Yep.
Find out what the key questions are and engage that yeah. way.
Exactly. And
fantastic.
For particular projects, we will have particular engagement processes. So again, look out for those. And from my point of view, the more the merrier.
Great.
Mac, I want to say a big thank you to Leslie from Glen Waverley and Pat for Preston for renewing their memberships.
Because they go into the draw.
They certainly do.
For two,
oh, I haven't joined.
Do. Oh, well, you
I better do that on my way out.
You do that on your way yeah. and you'll go into the draw for two business class tickets to LA on Virgin and seven nights accommodation.
I'm not sure I'm allowed to win that, but I'm definitely going to join today.
I'll be joining.
Oh, I don't know what your code of conduct is.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Macca and Tess, with soon-to-be Joy member Sally Capp, our Lord Mayor.
I'm a passionate member.
Fantastic.
I'm going to be a passionate member. Fantastic.
Sally, in your short time as Lord Mayor, which I'm sure feels like forever really so far, what's been your number one oh my God moment? Macca might call it the WTF moment.
Oh, and they can be quite different.
Yeah, yeah. You can't usually have one without the other, though.
Yeah. Well, oh, that's brilliant. I haven't had one as scary as that. The OMG thing that I've had to adjust to the most is actually the media. when you opened and said this is a more public role than you've ever had before, OMG, you were so right. And adjusting to almost daily some sort of interaction with media is still a big learning curve for me. But I did come in through the campaign of wanting to be very authentic, and that's what I've continued to do. But then think of some of the other OMG ones. I mean, OMG, when I went into the tank at the aquarium for Heart Kids, having been a scuba diver but not in that close proximity to sharks and huge stingrays, that's an OMG. On a more serious note, you know, the OMG of standing with 15,000 people at Princess Park on Monday was really a very emotional OMG moment for me. And then another OMG, to take it in a different direction, was, you know, being in the office with the Prime Minister and talking to him about things that are really important for Melbourne and for our future. And so you can see over the 4 weeks I've just had the most extraordinary experiences. The WTF still has to be when I watch those waste collection trucks try and back their way down tiny laneways in Melbourne, and knowing that down those laneways there could be up to 34 different bins from 34 different companies to collect. I just can't get my mind around it still, so that's one of the reasons why we're looking at that. But it's been incredible diversity and I've absolutely loved it.
Sounds a bit like a roller coaster though.
It's been a roller coaster at full pelt for these 4 weeks, and I'm sure things won't change too much.
And do you feel like your life is no longer yours? It's now a public life?
Well, it is. It was one of the things we discussed, my husband and kids and I, at the very, very start when we made the decision.
My husband and I. Go on. My husband and I.
You know, my husband and I, in a very crown way.
You're doing a Kath and Kim moment, Mac.
No. Just another female leader has said that before.
I see.
I better come up with a different word then, is that right?
No, you're elected, it's better.
So anyway, we knew at the start that that was what was involved, and we made a decision then that we understood that it was 24/7, 365 days a year, and a big commitment, but we knew there'd be lots coming back, which has been the case. I don't count it as work. I mean, I wouldn't count this as work. Here I am.
Having fun.
Having a ball. Mm.
You know, one thing, you always have the element of surprise in politics, Sally, when you tell the truth, and that's what we have from you. We have an outbreak of honesty, and that's refreshing because people want real discussions with their leaders, I think. And you know, as you said, look, you know, people are not always going to agree, but let's have open, honest and frank discussions. Because you put a position doesn't mean you're absolutely going to get in the ditch over it. But you're putting it out there and putting your view, and it's putting that view that I think is really important and is so refreshing.
Good. Well, thank you. And look, one of the things I love around Melbourne, because I walk around Melbourne in between meetings, I take the tram a lot, and many people stop me for a chat, and that's just the best, because what a great way to be informed is to actually hear directly from people on the street. So if you do see me, please stop me and let me know what's important to you and what you're thinking about it, because it's a very positive way. Even if you don't agree, and boy, I've had a few people yelling at me as well, which is all
you
good.
You may regret that you ever said that.
I won't, but I can imagine a few people in the office who will.
Safety, Sally, you talked about Princess Park and, you know, the vigil for Eurydice. Look, this isn't a new issue, but it's really, I think it's getting to the point where, as a society, we've got to address this.
Mm.
We've got to accept that people are entitled, and not accept, we need to insist that people can walk around at whatever time and wherever they want with safety, and particularly women. So what's the way forward on this? What I believe, as the Premier said, that men's attitudes need to change. But from your perspective, what do we need to do? What needs to change?
Well, it's heartening, you know, to hear you say that. And we had an interesting discussion in the office this week, because I assumed that there are times when blokes walk around, you know, and feel unsafe. But actually the feedback I had from men around the office was actually we rarely feel unsafe as we walk around the city. So that was a learning for me. Look, it's unacceptable. And we, you know, we're doing so many things. I've learnt a lot these last couple of weeks, particularly spending a lot of time with the police and then with the state government, whether, you know, it's having a chat with the Premier about it or the Minister for Police, Lisa Neville, et cetera. We have extensive CCTV. We've got amazing technology, which is not just now about filming things that have happened in the past, but it's about predictive. It's looking at predictive human behaviour. We look at lighting and we're continuing to build on the lighting in the city. We look at things like police presence and we're all trying our best to think of those things. And we know that the police are doing a crime prevention assessment again around Princes Park. But at the other end, this is all a response to human behaviour, which is unacceptable human behaviour. And when we have these very extreme, random acts of violence, as I said at the time, I think it makes everybody feel vulnerable and fragile. As much as for the majority of the time I move around this city, I feel very safe, it's those sorts of acts that do make you feel vulnerable. And so how do we as a community not just say this is unacceptable, but again, as a community, move to change people's behaviours? It's very complex. I don't know the answer, but I'm certainly willing to be part of the change.
There is no single answer to this issue. This is actually an issue that we all have to work on together.
I agree.
And we need to call out behaviour.
Yes, we do.
Because this... We're not going to talk about anything that's before the courts. But this sort of behaviour, it starts off with people behaving in a bad way, in a fairly casual way, at a very low level. And we accept it, right? We accept that people, you know, in terms of, you know, of sexual harassment, in terms of gender bias, you know, putting people down.
Macker, I'd flip it around the other way and say, let's encourage respectful interactions.
Yes.
Let's bring back good old-fashioned kindness and courtesy to each other. Right. Respect each other as equal human beings. That's all we ask.
Respect has to be at the core.
You know, so it is a really, really vexed issue, and we've got to address it, because people should not feel unsafe in our city, in our suburbs. It's not acceptable.
I agree.
It's not on. Really briefly, you slept out this week, I was going to say.
Sleeping around, are you?
Sleeping
already?
Around.
With a whole I've lot had of, a hell of a week this week.
In support of homelessness. So you spent a night in a sleeping bag. Generally, what location was it?
Well, look, I've actually had two nights of this week. On the early hours of Tuesday morning, we did street count, which happens every 2 years. So we've done it 8 times now in Melbourne, and we did it with 4 other municipalities this year, where 400 volunteers gathered at 3 a.m. at Town Hall and were given a grid in teams, and we went out and walked those streets and we looked in every nook and cranny. We went up the laneways and we looked for people that were sleeping rough or experiencing homelessness. We did that until about 7, and whilst we were out, we filled out all sorts of forms, and we'd make an observation if somebody was asleep or if they were willing to talk, then we could ask them all sorts of questions about their circumstances. And we do that so that we can use real data to improve and introduce new programs so that we can keep working towards a solution. And that was so eye-opening to be able to have those sorts of conversations and observe what's happening on our streets at those times of the morning. And then on Thursday night, it was St. Vincent de Paul's CEO Sleep Out, which is just an incredible initiative to see all of these leaders who are busy and doing great things in other ways around the city, but just to stop and take a night to really try and gain some insight. And when I say that, even so, I mean it was luxurious compared to what a lot of our homeless people experience. We were in a car park at Melbourne Uni. It was freezing cold, I have to say that. We did sleep on concrete. We were allowed to have a piece of cardboard. We were allowed to have a sleeping bag, which we then donated anyway, and something for a pillow. We had the delicious soup that's served by St. Vinny's through their Soup Fam program. We had some amazing speakers, including a lady that's a client of St. Vincent de Paul, who shared her story in such a brave way and really made us realise the amazing work that organisation does, but what's happening out there that we can be blind to. We are so easily blind to these issues, and there's so much that we can do to help.
What's your take out from that experience?
The takeout from that experience is that when I do see people sleeping on our streets and I think they look like they're in peaceful sleep, there's no way that they are. They would be changing position every five minutes because they've got very sore bones, that it's actually very easy to fall into that situation, easier than we think, and we need to respond with a lot of compassion. And I know that if we can coordinate the various services and agencies across Melbourne, and this is what's happening at the moment actually, we're going to make a really big dent into this issue in Melbourne.
Great. Love it. Sally Capp, thank you for your time. Yes, we've run out of time. Really appreciate it. Appreciate you don't regard it as work, which is great. Either do we, doing this. But thank you. And for our listeners, Sally is going to be regular once a month, at least, in the studio.
Or thereabouts. Mm. Let's be flexible about that.
Oh, yeah. I'm known for my flexibility. So thank you, Sally.
Thank you so much for having me. I always enjoy the chat. Thanks for your interest.
Thank you for your time. Okay.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.